Kathy Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Monday, February 10th, 2020. 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
How are you today for this fine, dreary Monday anyway here on the eastern shore of Maryland?
Off spreading the good word to our loyal listeners.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and see what we can share with this gold prickle. You know, it's moving up 330. People might say, well, that's not a whole lot. Well, you know what? It all depends on how you look at it. We've had a lot of strength in that dollar, and we're closing in on 99. And to see gold move higher at the same time the dollar is gaining strength, it's a little interesting. So you have gold up 330 today at $1,574. Silver's up 9 cents today at $17.86. Platinum was down 4, $967. And yes, palladium was up 47 at $24.10. The USDX today, as I mentioned, is up 0.17 at 98.86. Crude oil is down 79 at 49, broke that 50, 49.53. So much for the big old oil OPEC meeting to keep those to keep those prices from falling so much. But, of course, there's a lot of reasons for that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program, so you must stay tuned. We do have the stock market prices today. You know, the numbers are still filtering through, but at the moment, 4:03 Eastern Time. The Dow is up 162 points at 29,264. The NASDAQ is up 107 at 9,628. The S&P is up 24 at 3,352. 10-year yield 1.55%. And let's see, Euro dipped to 109 on the Euro. Negative numbers coming out of Asia and London, and, you know, it's pretty much the same old thing here. If you just ignore everything, everything is good. You know, if you keep on, you know, living in that fantasy world, things are good. So if you live in that world and you have gold, you may as well sell it, you know. What's the point if you think that, you know, but anyway, I'm not going to start on a rant on a Monday morning. It must be the dreary weather here that started me off on that foot, Dave. But there's some things in the news that we can talk about. We are going to talk about the budget, President Trump's budget. You know, it's, 3% GDP when, you know, we have the greatest economy ever now. We're going to get to 3%. We're barely keeping it at 2, so, you know, I'm not, unless there's more tax cuts and so forth, which is a possibility. That's what they want to do. And, but we can't, we have debt that's too great to be paid. I don't care what you do, you're going to, I don't care what you cut. We have debt too great to be paid. And they can't cut the programs enough to bail us out of our debt. And, of course, they want to cut your Medicare, your Medicaid, your Social Security, because that's what the, you know, that's the only thing that they really can cut, because they don't really care about you. And but nobody talks about that. All the promises you get about not touching the Social Security, not touching the Medicare, what do you think they're going to touch? But anyway, we'll talk about that later on in the program. Consumer prices, the index is scheduled for release on Thursday. Now, this is the indicator that tracks the average change in consumer prices or what you pay for various goods and services. And that also includes food, your energy, your housing. And economists are currently projecting that both prices increased in January compared with December. And so we'll have to see. Part of the Federal Reserve's role is keeping prices in check. You know, that's what they think that they can do. But when you're on a fiat currency, the only thing that thing's going to do is go up in price. And they'll make your boxes smaller and your product less in those boxes that they, but, you know, they'll charge you the same, but you think you're getting a deal. But and Dave, so that's what we have on low inflation.
Well, it's true. I mean, the consensus among economists who are polled about this think it's going to be at 2.5%, which would be the most since October of 2018. The Fed's preferred personal consumption expenditure index, or the PCE, the government reported late last week that it remains below the Fed's target of 2%. That's laughable in many respects. But as we know, low inflation was among the reasons policymakers at the Fed cut interest rates three times last year in an effort to stimulate the economy. When prices go up, our dollars just don't stretch as far while buying groceries or paying for services. Inflation rates also affects how much you earn, generally, and the value of your savings. It's an important factor for economic growth and, you know, can be a good motivator for investing in gold and silver, particularly when inflation is on the way up, as it is these days. Now, the monthly retail sales report for January is scheduled for release this Friday, Valentine's Day. This particular report details how much American consumers spent on things like clothing and food. Economists currently forecast a monthly increase in line with December at about 0.3%. If so, that will mark the fourth straight month of gains, even with hundreds and hundreds of retail stores being closed.
You know, it'll be interesting to see what the traders are going to anticipate is going to happen this February 14th, which is Valentine's Day. That Valentine's Day was actually the fifth biggest holiday spending-wise in 2019. There's one retail group that's estimating that you folks out there buying flowers and candy and all the goodies is going to spend wedding engagement rings, will spend an average of $196 celebrating this holiday, and that's up 21%, for a total $27.4 billion. So we'll have to see what's going on. That might give us an idea of what the economy is spending and what the consumers are spending. And, of course, consumer sentiment, as measured by the University of Michigan, dipped for the preliminary reading for February. But that report is also out on Friday. So you know what, Dave? It might be a pretty choppy week come Friday.
Yeah, we'll it could see. Be a fun way to head into the weekend. I mean, traders, investors are going to be looking for any shifts that suggests people are feeling more or less confident about spending money, even on things that might seem trivial, like good old Valentine's Day. Remember, short-term turbulence can be a good opportunity to buy precious metals at somewhat lower prices and continue adding money regularly to your portfolio, focusing on ways to manage risks and resisting the urge to sell your investments. No matter what happens in any given week, it's important to keep perspective and avoid letting headline news affect your long-term investment strategy. So for all your gold and silver needs, call Discount Gold and Silver Trading. You know the number, 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Yes, and you are talking about adding regularly in your gold and silver portfolio. And no one yet really knows how this coronavirus will be affecting economies and how it's actually going to affect China's economy. I mean, they were hurting already before the release of this information about the coronavirus. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. The death toll kind of has reached 910 yesterday. That surpassed the number that died in the SARS episode in 2003. And I guess the number of cases now exceed 40,000. The Hubei, the province in China, the center of the outbreak, is now in the third week, excuse me, of almost a complete shutdown. wow, that is just amazing. And it just baffles why, you know, you can look at this and say, well, big deal, 40,000, you know, that's a drop in the bucket. But the reaction to that number, when we think it's just a drop in the bucket, I mean, it really is amazing. And maybe I'm the only one that thinks that, Dave. But the what China has done, I mean, what is this thing? That's what, you know, when you make that kind of drastic measures, I ask myself, what the heck is that? That they're so scared of it becoming a pandemic. I don't know. It's I can't be the only one asking that question or being concerned about that. But, you know, we'll have to see exactly what the hit to the economic growth is going to be in the country and, you know, the after effects or the contagion. What happens to China happens in China, but what's the contagion globally? And with GDP possibly coming in a level lower than even the latest rounds of the stress test, you know, these regional banks could face a worst-case scenario.
Yeah, I read an article this morning, Melody, that speaking of some of the budget assumptions, which we'll talk about in the third segment, in the president's proposed 2021 budget, some economists are now saying that because of the coronavirus, first quarter GDP in the U.S. could be as low as 1.2%, not even hitting the 2%, and presumably that just is, you know, the impact the virus is having on global supply chains. But we'll see. Now, the apparently settled question of who's going to replace Angela Merkel as Germany's chancellor was blown wide open again this morning. That's when Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer announced that she's stepping down as leader of the governing Christian Democratic Union. That's Merkel's party. Her downfall was triggered when the party voted in a former East German region with the far-right AfD in the selection of a new premier. With Merkel already making clear that her current fourth term will be her last, attention's turning to her other possible successors. We'll talk about signs of a coming recession in Germany and how that will likely affect the U.S. and global economies. I believe that comes after our first break, Melody.
Well, yeah, you know, it will be interesting to see how the markets react to her changing, because she has been there for a long time, and, you know, she plays their game. And sometimes they are replaced without a blip in the, you know, in the headlights or anything like that. But I think with her changing might be a little bit different. You know, I mentioned earlier about the oil breaking 50. And, of course, there was the meeting of the OPEC and ministers. And they're blaming the drop in oil prices on the ongoing virus, coronavirus from China, because the drop in demand from them. And Russia has been resisting Saudi Arabian efforts to reduce production and seems to have rejected a proposal from OPEC to cut output. A barrel of West Texas, as I mentioned earlier today, it did drop below 50. So,
yeah, that's big stuff. There's no real new economic data of note today, ladies and gentlemen, other than what the markets are doing, as Melody reported at the outset of the program. We see that Fed Governor Michelle Bowman, San Francisco Fed Pres Mary Daly, and Philadelphia Fed Pres Patrick Harker going to be speaking at various events later today. We'll report on anything important, or I should say Melody will report with Butch on anything important that comes out of those speeches. As Melody mentioned earlier, the president published his 2021 budget proposals, which include funding for a mission to Mars, and steep cuts to various social programs. Again, we'll talk more about that in today's third segment. And of course, Democratic presidential hopefuls have their last day of campaigning ahead of tomorrow's New Hampshire primary. We'll see if the tabulation of votes there work out a little bit better than last Monday in Iowa.
It's just so funny. It's just so funny, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, why don't you go ahead and, talk about, Dave, why don't you talk about things that are going on in Europe? I guess Ireland had a national election this weekend.
That's true. That saw Sinn Féin, a left-wing party that in the past has been marginalized due to its connections with the IRA, won the popular vote. Sinn Féin now seems set to finish with the second largest numbers of member in Ireland's parliament. Party ran on a health and housing platform. Those are two issues that have resonated with voters there in the past. The result leaves three parties: Sinn Féin, the outgoing governing Fine Gael party, and Fianna Fáil, all with a similar number of seats and all far short of a parliamentary majority. The election results mean two things. First, the immediate future in Ireland will be dominated by talks between some very uncomfortable potential coalition partners. Be particularly interesting and potentially damaging if they don't come to a consensus on how to handle some of the aspects of Brexit. Second, the traditional parties will likely become more active on the issues of housing and health in the likely event there's another election in the near future. No wonder that Irish banks and property stocks are among the hardest hit in markets there this morning.
Does that have anything to do with Brexit or anything?
The election result?
Mm-hmm.
It's entirely possible. I haven't read any interviews of voters, but certainly, particularly when Theresa May was still in power, and after Boris Johnson took over as prime minister, and this uncertainty surrounding how trade was going to affect the borders between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. That was a huge development after the prolonged wars between the two countries, and it's led to years and years of peace. So we'll see what happens there. We can hope for the best.
Well, what's happening here is we're heading into a break right now. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Yes, that was me whistling. It's Monday. I'm going to turn those blues into a whistle or two. And that's a rhyme, and I'm a poet, and I don't know it there, Dave. Anyway, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter, and it is going out. And I was a bad little girl last week. I didn't get the market report. So this week, you're actually getting two market reports just to get you updated on that. And make sure you can listen to these programs live at the website, dgscoins.com. Just go ahead and get to the radio page. You can listen live at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, or you can listen to the archives. So make sure you get to the website, dgscoins.com. You know, Dave, even as these, you know, rates are remaining low and the ever-rising high-yield corporate debt levels are just continuing to rise, or maybe to raise in questions and concerns on Wall Street. And, of course, this is the latest warning comes from Schwab strategists who are advising clients to reduce their exposure. Yes, to reduce their exposure to a part of the market that will see a record number of maturities over the next 5 years. Gee whiz, we think risks are elevated. Gee, how can you figure that one out? We are concerned about the level of corporate profits. A fixed income strategist at Schwab, we think too many people are reaching for yield. And that's always the biggest problem. You reach for that yield, you've got the greatest volatility, the greatest risk, and no one who plays that market is usually smart enough to get out before you lose it all. It's just what happens. And investors, of course, for the past decade, you know, been in a race for yields because they're not making money anywhere else. Certainly, their money isn't keeping up with inflation, so that's why they search for these bigger yields. And, you know, we've seen the Fed, and that's part of the whole deal, with the Fed keeping the benchmark rates low. And we've seen the borrowing costs for corporates, even at the lowest end of the credit spectrum, remain cheap. So, I don't know, Dave, it comes with default rates, right?
It does. They've been surprisingly low on a historical basis. However, the last few years, that's been changing. The junk bond default rate in 2019 rose to 3.3%. That's the highest level in 3 years and well above a non-recession norm of 2.4%. That's according to Fitch Rating Service. Those defaults amounted to roughly $39 billion, and that's a 32% surge from the year before. Now, excuse me, analysts are particularly concerned about energy, which had a default rate of 9.5%, well above its 4% norm, and below the all-time peak of 19.7% in January of 2017. Energy happens to be the largest high-yield sector, though its share of the market is falling. In addition, the easy availability of refinancing is helping low-rated companies continue to revolve their debt and avoid obligations they would not be able to otherwise meet. Investors, however, don't seem to mind it. They're continuing to just ignore what's right in front of them, Melody, and scoop up this speculative debt, regardless of the credit risks.
You know, I can't remember who wrote this article, but he was talking about when we were going into the dot-com bubble. And everybody was, I mean, it was, you get this, you know, cocky attitude that nothing can go wrong, you know, that you're doing so good and you think you're smarter than the rest of the world. And, you know, you're just going to, and you see absolutely no risk, and risk doesn't seem to bother you because, hey, it's been great now. The momentum, the trend, you have all your mainstream media financial news programs talking about buy, 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 and you're like caught up in this wave, and you see nothing else, hear nothing else, and it's kind of like just this. You know, they're just, regardless of the credit risk, they all think they're smarter than, you know, they don't listen to reason. They don't, you know, listen to anything else. And it reminds me of that person writing that article that I read, I don't know, a year or so ago, a couple of years ago. This is where these investors seem to be at. And
it's the Las Vegas form of investing. It's like they're in a casino.
But they
and
are.
You're on a roll. You'll win one round at the craps table. Roll again. You'll win again. And you keep winning until you're feeling so cocky. Mm-hmm. I'd say arrogant.
Arrogant.
You bet it all.
Yeah.
And on the seventh time, the good luck charm runs out. You lose it all, just like that. And it's because they didn't see the risks standing right in front of them.
And everybody knows it. Even that person that's throwing those dice, they know. They know. They know how it works. And of course, we've talked a long time that the, you know, Wall Street's nothing but a gambling casino. You know, especially when you have government manipulating and corporate, multinational corporates manipulating. You talk about manipulating gold and silver. What do you think they do to the stock markets? You got, you know, 30 companies in the Dow. You have all these buyback share programs. You have all these. So it's you have all the money being pumped in by the Fed. So, you know, you talk, and everybody knows it. And everybody knows there's going to be a correction, but no one is strong enough to leave because they see that as, I don't know, giving in, maybe even a weakness. They don't want to pull out too soon because they're afraid they're going to miss that extra 1% or 2%. And what people don't know, no one ever sells at the peak. I mean, it's just, no one ever sells at the peak. Probably what? Maybe 5%, maybe 10% actually hit the peak. You know, and it's okay to sell before the, it's okay to sell at a level, even though the market might go up after that. That's okay. Because the odds are against you. If you stay in, the odds.
If you're in this, if you think you're a market timer, well, good luck with that. I learned a long time ago from the first, I guess he wasn't a broker, I guess he was a financial planner of sorts, and this is going back close to 30 years, who said, look, don't even think about trying to time the market. Wait till, you know, the market's at its lowest to buy and at its highest to sell, because you won't know 99.9% of the time. He said, and I think this is great advice, particularly if you're in and out of the market a lot and you're more diversified. But it rings true even if all of your assets are in gold or gold and silver. When you hit a point that achieves your original goal, that's the time to sell, if you're looking to sell. You know, if you're in it and your long-term goal is, well, I want, you know, it to double, and it eventually doubles, that's the time to sell, ladies and gentlemen. Now it's it the Melody.
It's
can
time
talk
to sell a portion
much better,
based on
well,
the fundamentals.
It could be a time
based on.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah, you never want to sell at all, or almost never. Never say never, right? But remember, you're in this for the long haul. Not in it for 6 months. You're not in it for a year, 2 years. You know, certainly when the market peaks, you can take some profits and ought to, particularly if you have cash needs for cash. But keep looking at the sun, ladies and gentlemen. It's a long-term horizon.
And lots of times, gold investors, you know, gold should be treated a little bit differently than paper investments, because gold, you know, you do get, like when silver hit $50 the last time, you know, I tried to tell a lot of people that had oodles and oodles of silver. Did I say gold or silver? When silver hit 50, I tried to talk to folks who had oodles and oodles of silver. Sell a quarter of it. Oh, no, the price is going higher. They would have sold a quarter of it and turned it into gold. Look at that. It would have been the best deal they could have ever done. But there's so much other people out there saying, stay, and all kinds of reasons go so. And you do have to look as what's suitable for you. So what's suitable for Joe is not necessarily suitable for Amy. You know, so you've got to look at what's suitable for you, what your holdings are, you know, and before you're out there. And sometimes trading, you know, one metal for another, maybe it's not what you should do, even though it could be a good trade for some. It might not be one for you. So don't fall into, you know, the pack and just do something because somebody's telling you, because everybody else is doing it. You know, look at what are your objectives when you're purchasing gold and silver? What are your budgets? What are your assets? What do you need to protect? And then get on a plan. Get on a plan for the smaller buyers. You know, put yourself on a savings program, because that's what it is. And then those of you with your 401s and your retirement accounts, your IRAs, well, you better start thinking about them. Nothing irritates me more when someone comes to me and says, well, you know what? You know, I have, you know, $500,000 sitting there, but my taxes and fees is going to cost me 20%. And I know I stand to lose 70%, but I'm not willing to give up that 20%. And yeah, it's a big chunk. It's a big bullet, a big bite to take. But you have to view the whole thing and how can you do it, and there's ways you can do it, and that's what you have to think about. So, you know, third of Americans, I don't understand how they can fear maxing out their credit cards. If they max them out, Dave, they just go get another one. I mean, isn't that hard?
Well, you know, despite the dangers of high interest debt, more consumers are testing the limits of their plastic. You know, to that point, more than a third of Americans, it's 91 million people with credit cards, said they're afraid they'll max out their card when making a large purchase. That's according to a new WalletHub credit card survey. And interestingly, large purchase, a majority of those surveyed said, is $100 or more. Odysseus Papadimitriou, I'm impressed. my good friend Alexis Andrianopoulos would be proud of me. He's CEO, I believe it's a he. Could be a woman, I'm not sure. But CEO of WalletHub, nevertheless, said, a healthy amount of fear is justified. Issues stemming from large purchases more often concern people making too many of them for the wrong reasons. 37% of those surveyed said they've already maxed out their credit card, and 14% said they've maxed it out on more than one occasion. Still, most Americans continue to take on ever-increasing amounts of debt.
Well, the U.S. has about $1.1 trillion in credit card debt. And this is the highest level since, yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Great Recession. That's out of about $19 trillion total consumer debt. And that consumer debt also includes auto loans, student loans, mortgages. U.S. households with revolving credit card debt owe nearly $7,000 on average, and it costs them about $1,100 a year in interest payments. It's just $1,100. Yeah. You have about 35% of cardholders are starting 2020 with more credit card debt than they had in the beginning of 2019. So, in order for us to have a good economy, in order, cardholders have, now in 2021, they're going to have more, start out with more credit card debt than they had in 2020. That's the way it works. If you want to keep this good economy, when our economy is based on 70% of consumers, you need to go out there and buy. They want you to be a slave to debt. They want you to be a slave. That's what keeps this whole system going. You know, yeah, you have some cardholders that pay their monthly balance in few, but that is so rare. And fewer of them are saying that they're paying it in full compared to a year ago. So something's going to have to give. Credit card interest rates are also near record highs at more than 17%. And there's no reason to think that that's going to change anytime soon. So aren't you glad that there was so much pressure to lower those interest rates? Because I'm sure it helped you with your credit cards, didn't it now? Ugh. It just irritates me.
Well, we saw the average interest rate, by the way, go up from 15% a year ago to 17%. And that's after three Fed reductions. So, beware the profiteers out there.
So, and yet this is just supposed to go on forever and ever with no corrections, a 3% GDP, and everything is great and dandy. I don't get it. I don't get it. We only have a few minutes left of this segment. When we come back, there's two things we wanted to talk about, and you know, we can talk briefly about the newsletter article, the German recession. We'll include that when we come back from the break. But I also wanted to talk about the administration's budget, because I think that's important. Since we're already talking about debt, that's kind of the perfect place to talk about it. So we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. It's 1-800-375-4188. Prices are moving, premiums are moving on gold and silver coins, so don't wait. Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold pieces are selling less than the 20s. So anytime they dip below the Mint State 62 $20 Liberties, it's a time to buy the half ounce. Well, they're not quite a half ounce, but the $10 Liberty coins, because in the future, they always sell for more than the bigger pieces. We know that. Even the Gold Eagles, fractional pieces, smaller you go, the more you pay for your gold. It's no different in the pre-33 coins. So anytime they dip below, it's really a buy. So give us a call. And they're not selling for much more than bullion prices. We're still at 20-year lows, ladies and gentlemen. Why do you ask? Look at the stock market. Is there any fear in those markets? Absolutely not. There's a lot of big money coming into gold, but there's no panic and no fear. So it's calm right now, but premiums are rising. Our weekly American, we're going to talk about the German recession first before we talk about our budget. The two go hand in hand. And, you know, what does happen in Germany does affect us. There is a contagion. It's just like China. We don't know what that contagion is going to be. Predictions of a 1.5% GDP from a, you know, a little over 2%, that's a huge drop for the United States. It's a huge drop. It's not like we're in China, and, you know, even if China drops 2%, they're at 6%, Dave? 8% their GDP? I mean, we're not that.
It had been 6 last year. Now they're thinking first quarter will be 5.5 at maybe less.
All right, unless more so if the coronavirus continues. We don't know what there will be, but no, it was with SARS, it was 2%. You talk about us going down 2%. We're in negative territory. That will affect jobs. 1.5 should affect jobs. So whatever happens in Germany, yes, it's going to affect us, whether you like it or not. And so, Dave, you write in today's newsletter article about the, same here, the prospects of a recession in Germany. So other than what I just said, why should we care other than it affects us?
Well, that could be the bottom line. I mean, the late scientist Dr. Helen Caldicott once said, a nuclear accident anywhere in the world is a nuclear accident everywhere in the world. Well, growingly, you can say the same thing about a recession. Sylvia Amaro writes, the prospect of an impending German recession jumped on Friday after the country published its worst industrial production figures since January of 2009. And with that renewed fear comes the question, as goes Germany, so goes the U.S. and the rest of the world? Well, in Friday's blog, I wrote that a recent analysis from MIT and State Street Associates shows there's a 70% chance of recession hitting the U.S. in the next 6 months. Well, certainly, should one hit Germany first, the impact on the U.S. and other major economies of the world would almost certainly be swift, and I predict unforgiving. We saw how the coronavirus has already affected global stock markets. Imagine what will happen if Europe's largest economy goes south. German industrial production fell in December for the fifth time in the last 7 months, falling by nearly 7% for the year. Exports also barely grew in December, up by just 0.1% month over month. Those figures, Melody, when combined with others, add to the ongoing pressure facing Europe's largest economy, Germany.
Well, you know, just late last week, their figure showed that the factory orders, Germany factory orders, contracted 2.1% month over month.
Yeah, Marcel Fratscher, who's president of the German Institute for Economic Research, said, "I am pessimistic about the German outlook because Germany could experience something like the perfect storm." He added that there are so many risks, like, you know, the global trade slowdown, the coronavirus, numerous, almost countless geopolitical conflicts around the world, and generally a weak financial sector in Europe and the UK, not the least of which because of Brexit, forcing the German government to take immediate action. Carsten Brzeski, chief economist at ING Germany, said that Friday's data has raised the risk that this week's GDP data could bring back the R word for the German economy. Well, I guess R doesn't stand for really respectable. Amaro observes that over the last year and a half, Germany's already narrowly avoided a recession.
We know just the unofficial data, according to preliminary data, Germany grew at a rate of just, 0.6% in 2019? Wow. That's the weakest expansion they've had in, 6 years? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the government, you know, cracks me up. They come out and they say, well, the industrial economy remains subdued. I think that's a little more than subdued.
Words matter. A little tad of an understatement, wouldn't you say?
A little.
Well, according to the OECD, the German economy is expected to grow 0.4% in 2020. That's down from the measly growth last year. They see it increasing, in fact, more than doubling, but to a still modest 0.9% in 2021. Things look rather drab in Germany, ladies and gentlemen. Fratscher surmised the smart government response would be say, look, we're a risk manager. We're acting now to stabilize the economy. At the moment, however, we have a bit of a paralysis. There's just not the political will to make that fiscal spending. That, again, was Fratscher. Now, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who we know is not going to run when her term ends in 2021, she and her cabinet have been under a lot of criticism over the last 2 years for not increasing investments in the country. For example, critics lament that Germany's inaction, this is on a fiscal policy basis now, is coming mainly at a time when the financial markets are offering negative interest rates, meaning Germany essentially would be paid to borrow more money.
Yeah, they're all running out of money. I mean, even you point out this, the European central bankers and other, you know, top policy makers, you know, they want Germany to open up its coffers and spend more in infrastructure and on its overall economy. And that's not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, that's what I read, too. I mean, they believe, maybe rightly so, that higher fiscal investments at this time, anyway, would boost German growth amid its various economic challenges. Now, admittedly, that's, based on that true Keynesian model, that fiscal increased or fiscal policy should be used in times like these to enhance growth in a given nation. But the German government, agree with that or not, has balked. As Amara observes, it's strictly committed to the Schwarze Null, new term, ladies and gentlemen, translated Black Zero. That's a law German law that basically prohibits Berlin from taking on any new debt. German's finance minister, Olaf, for you Frozen 2 fans, or one. Olaf Scholz maintained at last month's World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. He said, my view is that with the expansionary financial policy we had in the last few years, well, we did our job. He claimed that the public investment in Germany was also at a record high. In fact, Germany was one of the few to increase spending in recent years, although its efforts have been surpassed by China, the U.S., and Australia. I'm not sure if that's good news or bad, ladies and gentlemen. Some analysts believe that as long as trade tensions don't intensify this year, German manufacturing output could expand modestly starting in the second quarter. However, manufacturing comprises only 23% of the nation's economy. By the way, it's about 12% in the U.S. As I concluded in last Friday's blog, countless other economic uncertainties and geopolitical pressure should give pause to people everywhere to be extremely cautious with your investments as 2020 trudges along. Melody?
Well, we got enough time to talk about the highlights, and we can talk about it Wednesday also, of the President Trump's proposed 2021 budget. $4.8 trillion, ladies and gentlemen, was released, and there's includes a familiar list of deep cuts, of course, to student loan assistance, affordable housing, food stamps, Medicaid. The proposals, which must and won't be approved by Congress, includes additional spending for the military. But I thought I also saw where they were cutting back on that, too. National defense. Nope. National defense, border enforcement, along with money for the... This just irritates the heck out of me. The Space Force Initiative and an extension of the individual income tax. This also irritates me. That were set to expire in 2025. Its biggest reduction is an annual 2% decrease in spending on discretionary domestic programs like education, environmental protection. The White House budget is largely a messaging document that reflects the administration's spending priorities and has little chance of being enacted in full by Congress.
Yeah, that's more business as usual, regardless of who's at the top. I mean, while today's proposal is similar to the current president's previous requests, it's a stark contrast in many ways to the leading Democratic presidential candidates who've proposed large tax increases on the rich, an expansion of government efforts to provide health care, education, affordable housing, and various aid to the poor. Some Democratic candidates, as you know, are proposing sweeping efforts to forgive part or all of student loan debt and make some or all of public colleges tuition free. Good luck with that. Trump's budget again recommends eliminating subsidized federal student loans and ending the public service loan program. That's an incentive for teachers and police officers, government workers, and other public service that cancels the remaining federal student loans after a decade of payments. Under the administration plan, borrowers would pay 12.5% of their discretionary income toward their loans instead of the 10% under current law.
So they're only looking to eliminate for government workers other than teachers and police. Why would they do it for government workers? I mean,
well,
how can they be so selective? Why are they special?
Well, that's just included in the current law. Certain groups of people, I mean, to incentivize people to go into those professions. Certainly reasonable people can disagree whether one group or another ought to be included, in that debt cancellation program. That's just what the current law is.
Well, I don't see any problem eliminating that. I mean, heck, after a decade of payments, it cancels out your loans. What about everybody else? I mean, that's a problem with anything anymore. There isn't anything fair to anyone. In previous years, Trump's budget has proposed repealing the Affordable Care Act. Of course, you know, the same thing, replacing it with a system that would provide block grants of funding to states with far fewer rules about how the money should be spent. Well, if there's far fewer rules about how the money should be spent, then you're, to me, you're just looking for more and more corruption. You know, more money coming from the government. The new budget backs away from that approach. It leaves the Affordable Care Act's funding in place, but asks Congress to develop policies that would advance the president's health reform vision. That's not going to happen. Altogether, the budget proposes combined cuts to spending in Medicaid and Affordable Care Act subsidies that come to $1 trillion. Cuts that would mean substantial program changes. The budget also maintains the administration's tradition of highly optimistic economic growth forecasts, which, as you know, everybody knows, has not been borne out over the past 2 years. Even then, it would leave the federal budget deficit only slightly smaller at the end of a possible term, second term for Trump in 2024 than it was the year that he took office.
Yeah, it would miraculously balance the budget in 2035, but add a projected $7 trillion to the national debt by the end of this decade.
Good luck.
Yes. On the one hand, it also avoids some hot button issue. Yeah. Most notably, not reducing Social Security or Medicare benefits. Certainly a lot more to talk about with the budget. I'm sure Melody and Butch can talk some more about it tomorrow. To the extent they don't cover what they want to, we'll talk about it on Wednesday.
Alrighty, thank you, Dave. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye. That's too bad.